Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you, as always, by InsideThePenguins.com, a proud affiliate of the Hockey News. We got a great show for you guys today. We're going to talk a little bit about how the Penguins might need to restructure their defense and how we would go about that this offseason. And also, does that mean that they should also restructure their goaltending duo? We'll talk about the tandem of Tristan Jarry and Alex Nedeljkovic, obviously, all after we discuss the injury to Nola Chari. Now all Penguins fourth liners are on the shelf, at least as of this moment. But before we get into any of that, Horwat, The long national nightmare has come to an end. The Jager bobbleheads are back, baby. They are back, and you can pick them up in 2 weeks at either the Penguins game on April 6th. If you have that voucher and a ticket to the game on April 6th, you can pick them up in PPG Paints Arena. If not, you have to do a backdoor drug deal with them on April 7th, from what it seems at the Jim Shorkey Auto Group Garage. But the important thing is the bobbleheads are back, Horwat. I know you had been up sleepless nights thinking about the 19,000 or 18,000 Jagers that were just out in the world missing, like Toy Story 4 trying to find their home, or like Toy Story 1. They're trying to find their home a lot in that series. But nonetheless, they are home. The Jager bobbleheads are in Pittsburgh officially. I know that this must be a huge weight off your shoulders.
Man, this episode's off to a hot start. You want me to be honest with you? I forgot about them.
How dare you?
March 14th was a wild day, first of all. It was genuinely on the top of everyone's mind. It was a huge national news story that, I saw TMZ picked up the fact that they were found. Because this team is so bad, and I did take a weekend, not off, but I did take a weekend trip out of town, I kind of just forgot. Whenever I got the email that they were found, I was literally up in my apartment complex's putting green, just getting in a few putts, because it was a nice day. We just got back from DC, and that email hit my phone, and I went, oh yeah, those are still a thing. But hey, it's... And I'm not saying that I forgot about them in vain at all. I just think, because I keep glancing down and seeing the look you're giving me, I don't want to look you in the eyes. It was a fascinating story that we're not going to get many details of, let's just be honest. And I want to know all of the details, but we're not going to get any. Glad they're found, and I can't wait to see what kind of promo the Penguins cut for this. I cannot wait. It's going to be interesting.
You don't deserve to watch the promo because you didn't care.
I have better things to worry about.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It was, like I said, March 14th, the day it happened, was a wild day.
It was, even though it was March 12th, I'm pretty sure.
No, because the game was against the Sharks, and I'm looking at it right here on the 14th on my calendar.
All right. Well, I've been so distraught, I don't even forget what day it is. So.
See, yeah. At least I knew the date. But that day was a wild day. Like I said, it was a national news story. We imagine, because we had finished recording by the time that email came out. Imagine had we been on and we were actually
We would have had to been done. I wouldn't have been able to. I was distraught on that day. Can't even remember what day it was, but yeah, no.
It was a wild day. There were people accusing the Penguins of faking it. I had multiple people tell me it was real. And now here they are. They're back. They were found through negotiations, in Ontario, California. Like I said, I want to know more details that we're not going to ever learn.
Yeah, that
they're going to get in fans' hands, and then a week later they'll be on shelves, and we won't care.
Yeah, the Penguins announced that the Penguins...
Well, it'll be one of those stories that we'll look back on and go, oh, yeah, that happened once. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's like when the Penguins all got the mumps. It's like, oh, that was interesting. The entire league got the mumps that year. But nonetheless, Yager bobbleheads are found, as you mentioned, special cargo recovery team, presumably headed by Yager himself and Iceberg. But, you know, like you said, maybe we'll never get any information about this. Maybe Kevin Acklin will hold a press conference because that's just the way that the social team for the Penguins wants to hold it. So I don't know. We'll see.
I can also remember whenever we were discussing the banner raising, the jersey retirement for Yager, I remember saying, this is the last positive day the Penguins are going to have this season. Bobblehead night, I knew was coming. I guess I was still kind of right, because now the delivery of bobbleheads is a little muted, right? Yeah. It's, all right, come back to PPG on your own dime or at your own time and pick them up.
Yeah.
And then that's it. There's no game to watch unless you're going to that game.
It is not at your own time either. April 6th if you're going to the game, or April 7th if you want to do the back alley deal at Jim Shorkey Auto Group Garage.
Carve out some time to get here.
The full information is on the Penguins website if you want to have it without the jokes. And probably you probably should, because there's times included in that. But we should move on, Horwat, because we've given 6 minutes to the bobbleheads, even though I know you don't care now.
Like I said, though, there's nothing else good about this team right now.
This is true. A lot of the rest of this podcast is going to be negative.
We're not even going to discuss that they blew a 4-goal lead.
No, because it's just, that's Penguins hockey, baby. That's what that is. But let's talk about what happened in that blown lead. Part of that was Nola Chari injured in the loss to the Colorado Avalanche, being evaluated for a lower body injury. Horwat, he continues to be a walking hospital wing, and honestly, he's been like that his entire career. He has 2 years left on his contract, making $2 million a year. Definitely not anything more than a fourth liner the remainder of his career, but with these injuries, how worried are you for the remainder of that contract, seeing the way that he plays the game and he's not going to change it, and the fact that he can't stay healthy through an entire season? Now, he's only missed 15 games this year to this point, but it seems like he is never going to be 100% healthy going into a game just simply because that's the style of play that he has.
Yeah, you got to figure that just the list of injuries is piled up. It's not so much. It's obviously, yeah, it's 15 games, but it's, you know, possibly more games coming up thanks to a lower body injury. There was the Brendan Dillon hit that caused a concussion a couple weeks, months ago. I'm forgetting more, I'm sure. I'm sure an upper body snuck its way in there somewhere. There's the way that he plays, which is being a wrecking ball, getting in front of every shot possible. There was a couple of times where he would block a shot and you'd see him kind of limp off, and you'd go, is that the end of the game for him? That he'd come right back out next shift. It's the bumps and bruises pile up too. He plays that style of where he can be 32, but his body's telling him he's 38, 39. One of those deals where he's got the hard miles on. The concern, there is definitely a concern level. Thankfully, it's not a super expensive contract. And whenever he's healthy and on the ice, I don't mind him as a fourth line center, but you need to see the reliability of consistent ice time, of consistent playing time. And for what it's worth, the way Kyle Dubas might have to once again go in and dissect this roster, he might just become another casualty.
See, I'm not exactly sure how easy that deal would be to move. People see in multiple years on an aging veteran. Now, what he brings is invaluable in today's game, because not a lot of people play that warrior style, I will take a puck to the face before I let a shot go through type of hockey. And like you said, he might only play 9, 10, maybe 11 minutes a night, 12 minutes a night if there's a lot of penalties taken by the Penguins. But that's a hard 9, 10, or 11 minutes. Like, he is probably in more pain than anybody else on the roster, even those that played 26, 25 minutes a night. It does worry me a little bit, but at the same time, with the cap going up, like you said, $2 million has become less and less of a percentage in the next 2 years of the salary cap. And because even when he's not scoring, which he isn't, he has 7 points this season, that's it. And I think only 3 of them are goals. Even when he's not scoring, he brings either 3 or 4. He has one of those. Even when he's not scoring, he brings a very important aspect to the game, which is penalty killing, which is physicality, which the Penguins don't have much of, a little bit of sandpaper, which the Penguins don't have much of. Seemingly, they're getting a little bit more of it, but don't have much of nonetheless. And I think that while it is worrisome, that's a contract that, hey, if he gets hurt, it's a fourth liner at the end of the day. Now, you don't want a lot of those types of contracts because as of right now, the Penguins are one of the worst goal-scoring teams in the league. So you can't have 3 or 4 of those guys, and that has been what the Penguins' fourth line has been all season this year. Now, Jeff Carter has almost 10 goals despite playing exclusively on the fourth line. But then you have guys like Jansen Harkins who, yeah, do a lot of the things that Nolichari does, block shots, makes hits, plays physical, has no offensive upside. But the problem with a guy like Harkins is Achari's here doing it better. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And Harkins also can't play center, which hurts him at the same time. So I think with the injury proneness of Nolichari, is it concerning? Yes. Is that something you can live with? Yes. I do think it's something that you look forward to next season. You hope that, hey, if you get 65 games, that's fine. The important thing is going to be, is he healthy at playoffs? Doesn't matter this year. Doesn't make a difference this year. But next year, you're hoping to make the playoffs. That's where I'm concerned. Because if he's healthy for 60, you know, games in the regular season and the Penguins get to the postseason and he's not healthy, then it's an issue. Because for a long time, that has been the goal. If you're injury prone, just be healthy for the playoffs. So that's, I guess, the same way you have to look at it with Achari, but it doesn't matter this year because they're nowhere near the playoffs. But the other interesting part of this injury at this point is the fact that Jeff Carter is out as well, day-to-day with an upper body injury. We don't know if he'll be able to return later this evening against the Carolina Hurricanes. By the time you're listening to this, that news might already be out from head coach Mike Sullivan. But then you look at the minors where, okay, they might have to use an injury call-up. Jonathan Gruden has been that guy, so potentially, presumably, he might be that guy once again. You thought, okay, maybe this is an opportunity for Vasily Ponomarev if it is a longer-term injury for Nolichari, but Vasily Ponomarev is out week to week, and now I have questions about whether or not we'll see him at all this season. Week to week, he's not going to come back from injury in his first game, be his first game at the NHL level with the Penguins, so there's a chance you don't see Ponomarev again at all this season at the NHL level. Is it finally time for Sam Poulin? Is that what this is? It's finally time for Sam Poulin because he's healthy. The entire fourth line is decimated, and they are going to use an injury call-up if Jeff Carter isn't healthy. So is it finally time you call up Sam Poulin? Don't put him on the fourth line, for Christ's sake. Put him on the third line. Let Lars Eller play that fourth line role because the Penguins, they got 1 point out of a possible 4 over the weekend. They're falling further and further behind. While there is a chance, you wrote that story yesterday, Horwath, there is statistically a chance anybody with a brain knows you're not making the playoffs. So get some guys some time. You don't even have to use a regular call-up at this point because of the injuries. Use that emergency loan. Give Sam Poulin a chance. This might finally be the time because there's no other options.
It might be. It'll just, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. We'll be keeping an eye on the media site roster all day to see if a new name appears. I'll mostly be looking for a Gruden or a Sam Poulin. Because at this point of the year, I don't see a guy like Benny Hinostroza making his way back up. Definitely don't see Radim Zahorna making his way back up. I just don't. Who knows how long Harkins is on the shelf for exactly. I saw him in a cast last time I saw him. That was a couple weeks ago now, though. And genuinely, I just don't know if Matt Nieto's going to come back at all this year.
What's the point?
At this point, what is the point? Yeah, it's we're down to guys like Poulin and Gruden. That's about it. Because Gruden's been fine, especially considering if you are just looking for a fourth line center, if that's all they're looking for and they're not trying to adjust the rest of the roster, then yeah, it's just going to be a Gruden call up and we're going to move on with our lives. If Mike Sullivan is ready to start experimenting, getting in there and tweaking all of the little things, so maybe you go with bumping Lars Eller back up to that first line wing spot, and maybe Drew O'Connor plays fourth line center, and there's Sam Poulin at 3C. And now I'm just doing a lot of moving and shaking because, again, at this point of the year, it is time for throw anything against the wall. Let's just see what happens. My question, though, is, and this more gears toward today's game rather than looking into Columbus on Thursday and then a four-game road trip. Do the Penguins want, if it's Sam Poulin, him to come up and get in a practice with the team maybe, which would be tomorrow between games here? Would they maybe call him up after the Carroll? Maybe it's Gruden today. Send him back down in replacement of Sam Poulin so he can get an escape. Maybe they scratch him on Thursday because maybe Carter's able to come back, and then a second practice on Friday and then kickstart him on the road?
Maybe.
Who knows? Like I said, I'm just kind of big-braining it. That's also the mentality of maybe we're still fighting for a playoff spot, which technically they are, and they're going to until they're mathematically eliminated. Only four teams in the league have been officially eliminated, so, or is it three?
I think it's last just time three. I checked, it was just three, and they were all in the Western Conference.
Oh, Columbus was added to that, so maybe it is four. Four, but yeah, it's about that time of year where the teams that are on the outs are still fighting because they believe they have that fight. And the Penguins were one of those teams. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting. Like I said, I'm going to keep an eye on the roster all day. You know, see who hits the ice in morning skate, and then we'll go from there.
Yep. A lot of this is determined based on the severity of Achari's injury, which we at the moment do not know. So if he's out longer term, I'm sure if he's out longer term, they'll just shut him down. There's literally 3 weeks left in the season or 4 weeks left in the season or what have you. I would like to see somebody get a chance. Now, Ponomarev, unlikely now that that's a week-to-week injury. He's going to have to come back at his feet underneath him again at the AHL level. He's only played four games in the Penguins organization. So, you know, that seems like that closes the door, which is unfortunate. But, hey, we've been saying it all year. Maybe, just maybe, it's time for Sam Poulin. But we're going to take a quick break. When we return, how would you fix this Penguins defense, Horwat? We'll discuss that after the break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com. We got a listener question yesterday on the YouTube side of things, a comment from one of our favorite commenters. Gomes Damon says, how would you guys address this defense this offseason? Because I've said on multiple occasions, the defense might end up being priority number one this offseason. It has been that bad this year that might be priority one, is restructuring the defense for the third consecutive season. You can make the argument that they didn't need to do it the first of those three seasons, which they probably didn't because they had the sixth best defense as far as expected goals against per 60. But hey, it's neither here nor there, and I'm sure Ron doesn't give a crap at this stage of the game. But last year it was needed, didn't work from Kyle Dubas. This year it might be needed once again. The first thing on this list, and I think nobody listening to this will disagree, the first thing you do to fix this defense is you fire Todd Reirden.
There it is.
Everybody says it about the power play, but in his 4 years, the Penguins went from 13th in expected goals against per 60 up to 6th, down to 21st last year, and down to 27th this year. Bottom five, bottom six in defensive play. That's just not acceptable. Not to mention, you pair it with one of the worst power plays of the Crosby era, the worst power play of the Crosby era, including that first year where there was really nobody on the team, that's cause for, you know, cause for firing, I guess. I don't know. I was trying to think of a better way to say it, but it's cause for him to be fired, right?
Yeah, it's that's not, those aren't good numbers. It's, you know, whenever he came back to the Penguins organization, all the defensemen that had been there before, or at least Crystal Tang, you know, everyone spoke highly of him and how much of a defensive guru he is, and we saw it for a little bit there. We know that the morale was kind of boosted a little bit under Todd Reardon coming back in and, you know, rejoining with his buddy Crystal Tang, and then, you know, bringing some good things to young defenders, to the young defenders that the Penguins had at the time. I still agree with you that, yeah, Todd Reardon can't come back, but also it feels like at least last year and in certain areas this year, he just didn't have a ton to work with either, right?
This is true.
But that doesn't make much of a difference, especially considering I think his contract is up anyway. I don't remember. But, I mean, last season, Jeff Petrie didn't reach the potential we all thought he could. Jan Ruda was kind of a disaster. And I don't even remember the rest of the names because it doesn't really matter. But this season around, again, Erik Karlsson didn't reach the potential he could reach. Marcus Pedersen's taken a huge step forward, but I think he would have done that under anybody. Pio Joseph isn't reaching the potential he could reach. He's getting better in more recent games, but he's been given the push of a first-line position. And then there's Ryan Graves, who knows if how he would have performed under a different defensive mindset. Who knows? But clearly, he hasn't hit his potential, and that's not working out. So, whether it's by firing or by letting the contract run, that, yeah, I'm with you on Todd Reardon is the first bell to fall this offseason.
Yeah, and you do have to give credit where credit is due. He has shepherded along Marcus Pedersen's progression. Mm-hmm. And you can say what you want. It could just be Marcus Pedersen being a very good defender and that always being the case and just needing to grow into it. But Todd Reardon was here for the majority of that growth. Say the same thing about Chris Letang. He's had some of his best years of his career since Todd Reardon has returned. We remember, what was it, 2 years ago where he had 70 points or had a career high in points at one stage. I think it was 2 years ago because last year he dealt with all the health issues and was still a pretty good defender. And then this year, before the wheels fell off, which it fell off for the entire defense here over the last month, Chris Letang was having another season that was being touted by most as a career year. He was being more responsible. He was being better in his defensive zone. And I think you can tell that the second the desperation started to get very high for the Penguins to start scoring goals is the second Chris Letang's defensive game started to slip. So, again, what came first, the chicken or the egg in that situation? That's a different conversation. So he has done some good things. He's not inept behind the bench, but it's just time for a change, especially when you're considering the fact that it's time for a coaching change in general for this Penguins team. You can't run it back with the same guys behind the bench, especially the guy that is part of, or in charge of, I should say, your two biggest failures as a team, which is power play and defense. So Todd Reardon, he might be the fall guy, but he's the fall guy that's going to take it. Second part of this, and we'll run through him a little bit quicker. Second part of this is the big part, and it's a part that might be very, very difficult to accomplish. You need to move on of one of Erik Karlsson or Ryan Graves. I've said this in the past. They both can't be here next year. They can't because they symbolize two different styles and two different ways to shape a defensive core. They're not going to work well together, and they're not going to work well in the same defense together because, as we've talked about, Graves doesn't really fit with Chris Letang or Erik Karlsson, and you can't keep them on the third pairing for the next 5 years. You can't. Or at the very least, the next 2 years, which is what remains on Chris Letang's contract. You just can't. Or no, Letang had a 6-year. So the next 3 years is what remains on Erik Karlsson's. So what I would say is try Graves first, because I don't think either are going to be easy to move. But Graves has $4.5 million, which is easier to move in general than a $10 million contract. He only has a 12-team no-trade list, which is definitely easier to move than a full 31-team no-trade list, which is what Erik Karlsson has. And it's not like Graves, who's having the worst year. I know you're selling low. It's not like he hasn't had a history of success, which means somebody out there might be interested in his services for nothing, especially if they don't think that they can find something on the open market for cheaper than $4.5 million. Because Graves just doesn't fit the Penguins' mold. I would say if you're going to try it, he's the first guy you try. And I would say the door should be open on Karlsson, because if you can't trade Graves, you have to do something. But I would personally like to see Karlsson get more of a chance, as I talked about last week, with the Penguins.
I've heard there's phenomenal. There's a phenomenal living situation in Chicago or Arizona even. Sorry, I'm trying to think of teams that are just trying to retool everything as much as they can. And I forget what team it is. Is it Arizona that has no defenseman going into next season already? Arizona. Arizona has no defensive contracts after this year. They're the first person you call, and you tell Ryan Graves, hey, congratulations on the new kid. I've heard Arizona's great for so many different things. Hopefully they stay there. They probably will. Arizona's going to need to hit the cap floor next year, too. That's if they're still not looking to win, there's a big chunk of money that can maybe help boost that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Again, the no trade list works in that favor. Who knows? It's coming to the point of you got to just ship off Ryan Graves and, like you said, or Erik Karlsson. I think Graves, A, seems more likely. B, seems more of a the team would rather move him.
Yes.
And it's just a failed experiment that Kyle Dubas will have to essentially fall on his sword for, which I believe people have said he's done before. So nothing new for him. Just another whoops, my bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest mistake he made last offseason. People will say it's the Erik Karlsson trade, but then those are people that just don't understand the fact that he got rid of a lot of dead weight in the Erik Karlsson trade. So not only did he bring in a guy who is having one of the better offensive seasons from a defenseman in the Crosby era, he just is, even though it's disappointing for his standards, it's still better than most of the times and most of the defensemen we've seen in the Crosby era. It's something where the Penguins also got out from under a lot of issues going out the other direction. So again, that's step two. Move one of Karlsson or Graves, preferably Graves. But if you can't just run it back with that top four. You just can't. So then you have the top three of hopefully Letang, Pettersson, who you're not getting rid of either of them, and Karlsson. I think the rest of it, scrap. P.O. Joseph, let him walk. He's a restricted free agent. Don't extend a qualifying offer and then let him walk. Bring in an entirely new third pair that is focused on defense, defense, defense. I don't care if the defense isn't going to score. They need to be able to protect the net front. They need to be able to protect their own zone and keep scoring chances to a minimum. Because this team, we saw it at some point this season, that they got to a point where they needed to outscore their problems. They're not going to be able to do that. I don't care what you say. They're not going to be able to do that next season in particular. Crosby is great. Crosby looked like 18-year-old Sidney Crosby against the Colorado Avalanche. He was phenomenal. But he's not going to be able to carry the entire team, especially if the team is trying to outscore their problems. It's just not going to happen. So you need better defense. I'm fine with John Ludvig coming back as a seventh defenseman because I just like the way he brings or what he brings to the game. Mm-hmm. And he's young, so there's a chance he grows on that defensive side of the puck. But you got to bring in some defense-first blue liners to round out that bottom pairing and also to be that defensive partner for Erik Karlsson, if that's who you end up keeping. You need somebody that is going to be a Marcus Pettersson-type player. The name that I love, even though it doesn't fit, it's not going to happen, it's too expensive. I would love Chris Tanev on the Penguins. But again, too expensive. He's a right shot defenseman, and I just don't see how that would work. And it's, you know, don't wire yourself down if you get out from under Ryan Graves with another contract that could turn into Ryan Graves. I don't think Tanev would, but again, very wary of that situation after what happened last offseason with me pounding the table to bring him in, and he turned out to be a pumpkin. But when you look at the Penguins defense, they don't have the young players to invest on the blue line that they do at forward. We talked about in the first segment, Poulin, Ponomarev. You have, you know, Braden Jaeger, who's going to have a very interesting year next year. He needs to start it in juniors, and then we'll see where, you know, where he goes from there. Maybe he gets that 10-game call-up to start the season so they see what he looks like. Who knows how he progresses over the offseason. He's having a great year in the WHL. But on the blue line, Jack St. Ivany might be the only guy you could potentially invest in there. Owen Pickering is still too far away, and I just don't see anybody else, like maybe a Jack Rathbone. But again, you need defensive-style defensemen, and I feel like Rathbone is still too much of a, you know, tweener, P.O. Joseph, offensive-liking defenseman for what you're going to need next year if you're the Penguins. So I think that that's the four steps, and then that's how you try to fix it. It's not an easy situation. It's not by, you know, I'm not giving you the guidebook to fixing it and making it another top five unit, but that's just what the route I feel like the Penguins should be taking.
Yeah, it's there's going to need to be changes again. It'll be the third year in a row of this. And you also got to find more than, nothing against Jack St. Ivany, he's played fine in his couple of games. You got to find more right-hand shots, too. The fact that he's the third in the organization, period. Even Owen Pickering is left shot. So you got to figure something out there as well.
You do. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, finishing it off with our weekly Pens poll. Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com. We asked our weekly Pens poll yesterday, and you guys all answered. We said, would you be comfortable with the Penguins running back the goaltending duo of Tristan Jarry and Alex Nedeljkovic in 2024-25? This is one of our closest polls we have ever put out. 53% say yes, 47% say no. So by a slim margin, more of you believe that they should run it back with Tristan Jarry, who has 4 years remaining on his contract, and Alex Nedeljkovic, who is set to become an unrestricted free agent on July 1st, so a new contract would have to be negotiated with Ned. So, Horwat, what do you think? Would you be comfortable with Jarry and Ned coming back next season?
So, I don't know if they should, in terms of the Nedeljkovic piece at least, but I would be comfortable with it, yes. I think that overall, when it comes to the question of, am I comfortable with it? Yes, I just don't believe that is the proper move. But if they both had show-me years this year, and they both proved to bounce back in phenomenal ways. I know things have just been devastating recently. But there could be many reasons for that. We just discussed the defense in front of them. We don't know exactly what the team is thinking, saying, or feeling about the rest of the year. And, you know, I'd say that they overall, they've played pretty well, and the numbers just aren't going to back it up. I think they've been in games. Both goalies have gone on stretches. There was the genuine argument of the starter for a little bit there. So I would say I'd be comfortable with it. I don't know if it's the proper move, though, so I'll leave it at that.
I'm interested by you saying it's not the proper move. Are you somebody that believes that Joel Blomqvist can make that jump immediately to begin next season? Is that why you're saying it's not the proper move to bring Nedeljkovic back, or do you just think it's a money thing where Nedeljkovic might be a little too costly?
You know, a little bit of both. I could see where, because you have to figure they shipped out Hellberg at the deadline, essentially saying that if one of Jarry or Nedeljkovic gets hurt near the end of the season, but they made that deal and were still gunning for the playoffs. If one of Jarry and Nedeljkovic gets hurt, obviously they have faith in the other to still be the starter and faith in Blomqvist to be the backup, unless they're considering the other goalie in that trade to be the third string in that situation. You know what I mean?
The guy that played ECHL hockey this season?
Yeah. So you have to figure that the organization believes in Blomqvist already. So I'd say it's a little bit of both when it comes to the proper decision of if they have that faith in him and he's played very well, then that's a good step forward in making him maybe the backup next year, or maybe find another option for a backup and then maybe make him a third string, run three goalies. There's all different sorts of options.
Yeah, there's different ways that they could go about it if they choose to not bring back Nedeljkovic. But I agree with the premise of the question. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I think that I'd be comfortable with Jari Nedeljkovic. I think Jari showed you for the majority of the season that he is a number one goaltender. Now, yeah, like you mentioned, the wheels have fallen off. The wheels have fallen off the entire team, yep. though. I see a lot of people saying, yeah, he's showing once again that he can't show up in the big moment. Show me a big moment over the past month. The Penguins have been dead in the water for the last 3 weeks. So why on earth are we holding it against a guy when the defense is given up? The forwards went on a stretch of 10 games where I think they scored maybe 5 goals total. They got shut out 3 times, and you're going to hold that against the goaltender? No, that's a vendetta. And I've long realized that there's a majority of this fan base, not even a minority of this fan base, a majority of this fan base that will never be able to give Tristan Jarry a fair shake after what happened against the Islanders back in 2021. They will never look past the turnover to Josh Bailey that cost the Penguins the end of that series. They will never be able to do that. That's just not in their nature anymore. And that's fine. You can live in ignorance all you want. But he has been a very good goaltender for the majority of the season, despite having a defense that has Swiss cheese written all over it. Like we mentioned, they're 27th in expected goals against per 60. That's telling you that they are 27th in the amount of goals that they should be giving up. Yet they're only 17th in goals allowed per game, and they were top 10, top 5 for a majority of the season. And that credit goes all to Jarry and all to Nedeljkovic, because there was a time where, like you said, it could have gone either way because Ned was playing well and they were riding the hot hand. There was also a month-long stretch where they rode it with Jarry because he was the guy in January. So, you know, I'm comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of people that are going to dislike that take, but hey, that's fine. They have 4 years left on that contract, and at $5 million, for the majority of the season, he's been worth that money. So I'm perfectly fine giving him another chance, especially if it's behind a better defense. Now, again, if is a very strong word, doing a lot of lifting in that sentence. That's up to Kyle Dubas. Maybe he should listen to my four-step plan that I did in the second segment. Maybe that works. Maybe it doesn't, because I'm also not an NHL general manager. But I think when you look at Jarry right now, his numbers do not reflect that of a great goaltender. But when you look at the story all-encompassing and see how much the Penguins defense has given up the entire season, because let's not forget, even at the beginning of the year, they had their issues giving up more odd man rushes than any team in the National Hockey League. With all of that encompassing, I think that I would be comfortable with Jarry and Nedeljkovic back. I agree with you, though. What is the price tag on Nedeljkovic? And where is Joel Blomqvist? I feel like it's still too early to say, hey, at the beginning of next year, he's automatically the number two. I feel like it's still too early for that. But again, that's just my opinion. I feel like he needs to start next year. At the AHL level, you need to see that growth over the summer and what it looks like at the level that he's already had a track record in, and then see if he can make that jump and just kind of take your time with that, because goaltenders, as you know, Horwat, they're voodoo, and a goaltending prospect is more voodoo than anything, because as we all know, development is non-linear. So it's an interesting decision, because the Penguins have that young stud grooming himself in the minors, getting ready for his opportunity. But also, Nedeljkovic has been a very, very good backup. And we saw how many years in a row that they should have changed the goaltending situation, and they didn't. Now, this is the first year that you can say, honestly, yeah, maybe they should run it back. And now everybody's saying to change it. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting summer for many reasons. But I think that this should be the free space on the bingo card for Kyle Dubas, if he's able to get Nedeljkovic back on a half-decent, like, on the same contract would be perfect, but we all know he's probably going to ask for more, unless you, I mean, the negotiating table is a war zone, so unless you start saying, what happened at the end of the year here, right? I mean, you didn't hold up the entire year, which, you know, that's the negotiating table. I would say, look at the defense in front of me, but at the end of the day, it's an intriguing duo to me, and I think it's a duo that could backstop the Penguins to the playoffs once again.
Yeah, you also have to consider how many teams did Kyle call about Nedeljkovic too. His name was popping up a lot in, as the trade deadline approached. So
yep,
you also have to figure maybe it's just the end of the road anyway. So there'll be a lot to look into. It'll be an interesting offseason in many ways, and that'll be one of
yep.
them.
Yep, so we'll keep an eye out for that. We'll keep an eye out for the Jager bobbleheads because they're officially in Pittsburgh. It's a great day for hockey, Horwat. Penguins versus the Canes tonight. Jake Guentzel returns. He's on an absolute tear with the Carolina Hurricanes, so would not be surprised to see him go out there and absolutely light up his former team at PPG Paints Arena. But that's going to do it for this episode of The Tip of the Iceberg. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.